Our lesson this morning focuses on a young Jewish man who lived in the nation of Israel about 3,000 years ago. He lived during the reign of King Saul, and his story is found in the book of 1 Samuel. This young man did something remarkable, something unbelievable. He went out and was willing to face an opponent far bigger and far stronger than he was. In those days, the Philistines, if you look at the map, Israel is in green and Philistia is in yellow. In these days, during the reign of King Saul, the Philistines were Israel's main enemy. They would often come and fight against the Israelites, and they were terrifying. And it was on one of these occasions, when the Philistines had come against the Israelites, and it appeared that the Israelites had no chance of victory. Philistines were too many and too strong. The Jews were afraid. The soldiers were hiding in their tents. And it was during this time that this young man that we're talking about this morning went out onto the field of battle against impossible odds. No way that he can possibly win against his opponent, and yet he went anyway, knowing that his God was bigger and stronger than the size and the strength of his opponent. And when he went out to fight this battle, the victory that he won was a victory for the ages. It inspired the Israelites to go and fight, and they won. And this young man, because of this event, became a national hero and a national leader, because he was willing to go and fight an opponent without regard to his strength, without regard to his size, because of his faith in God. The young man that I'm speaking about, of course, is who? No, it's Jonathan. Who did you think I was talking? You thought I was talking about David. Oh, well, that makes sense. Because David did something very similar to that, right? So Jonathan is the one I'm talking about, but I can see where you got mixed up, because David did something very, very similar to that. The story of Jonathan is found in 1 Samuel chapter 14. And the story that you're thinking about with David and Goliath is found in 1 Samuel 17. First, let's look at what happened with Jonathan. When the Philistines have come against the Israelites, we see in verse 6, as the Israelites are not engaging, they're scared. They don't want to engage. They can't win. And so Jonathan says to his armor bearer in 1 Samuel 14:6, "Come and let us cross over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. Perhaps the Lord will work for us, for the Lord is not restrained to save by many or few." God doesn't need a big army. God doesn't need tanks and bombers. God doesn't need machine guns. God doesn't need anything. God can save and win a victory even by a few. And so Jonathan goes out to fight. And we read in verse 12, "The men of the Philistine garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer, said, 'Come up to us, we'll tell you something.' Jonathan said to his armor bearer, 'Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hands of Israel.' Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, his armor bearer behind him, and they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer put some to death after him. The first slaughter that Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about how many men? 20 men. Jonathan, with his armor bearer, goes and fights and defeats 20 people because of his faith in God. Now, you know that David did something very similar to that, right? In 1 Samuel chapter 17, the Philistines have again come up against the Israelites. The Israelites, again, are terrified and unwilling to fight. And then David shows up, And David hears Goliath taunting Israel and taunting God. And he says, I'm going to go and fight Goliath. What's remarkable about that? Well, Goliath is a big man. There's some textual question, but Goliath was anywhere from 6'6 to 9'9. Right? So when David was facing Goliath, it was a little bit like something like this, except the stakes are not who scores a basket. The stakes are what? Life and death. And the difference between David and Goliath was even greater than Muggsy Bogues and Patrick Ewing. The height difference was greater. The strength was certainly greater. Goliath was carrying 125 pounds just of armor. That's not counting his weapons. He was carrying a lot of weight because he was a very strong man. And he was an experienced warrior. So was David at this time. A lot of times we miss that. A lot of times, particularly if you look at children's Bible story books, David's a little boy. David was not a little boy. He was a young man. And he'd already fought and won battles, but he's nothing compared to Goliath. And yet he goes out to Goliath and he does what young men in competition do. He trash talks him. He goes out and before he's going to defeat Goliath, he's going to trash talk Goliath a little bit. And he says this in verse 45 of 1 Samuel 17. You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines to the birds and the wild beasts, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And David does what? He puts a stone in the sling, and he throws it, and it hits Goliath in the forehead, and it knocks Goliath down. And before Goliath can get his wits about him, what does David do? He runs up, and he takes his sword, and he cuts off his head. And he wins the victory. And Israel is inspired. And they go and they defeat the Philistines. And then here's what I want to focus on. After David comes back carrying the head of Goliath, which is really cool. After David comes back and has a conversation with Saul. So here David comes back. He's got the head of Goliath by the hair. And he's just standing there talking to King Saul. They're just having a conversation. But somebody else is there. If you look in chapter 18, this is why we always have to keep chapters together. If you look at chapter 18, it says, now it came about when David had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of who? The soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took David and did not let him return. Verse 3. Then Jonathan, I want you to notice how he puts it. Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, his sword, his bow, and his belt. David and Jonathan became best friends. But I want you to notice carefully how the text words it. First of all, and now we have to do this. Particularly now we have to do this. We didn't have to used to do this. But in this day, in this time, in this culture, we always have to stop and make a qualification. David and Jonathan were not homosexual. Now we have to say that because that's what people are doing with the story. They've been doing it with the story. Now they're doing it even more with the story. We know from David's behavior, from his attitude, we know from what the law said, we know from their character and who they were, this was not the relationship that they had. So we can forget about that for right now. They were best friends. But I want you to notice how this happened. Notice that they did not become friends the way we often become friends with people. You're on the same basketball team together. You had a math class together. You grew up next to each other. Went to the same school together. You worked next to each other. And you just kind of fall into a friendship. I want you to notice why it is that David and Jonathan become best friends. It is because Jonathan sees something in David that he loves. And Jonathan takes the initiative to covenant with David and take David into his life as a best friend. This is Jonathan making up his mind and with great intention saying, here is somebody I really want to be friends with. I'm going to make a covenant with him, and I'm going to enter into a friendship with him. Now, why is this friendship so significant? You've no doubt heard of it before. You've no doubt heard sermons on it before. Why is that? Because the friendship of David and Jonathan became one of the most important parts of their lives that helped them be what they could be before God. And as they were what they could be, they in turn had a tremendous influence on the believing community. And that's the power of friendship. The big idea of our lesson this morning is simply this. Friendship is crucial. Friendship is crucial. It doesn't sound crucial. And you know, so-and-so, yeah, we're friends. I had a friend growing up, got some friends, hung out with some friends. Friendship doesn't sound crucial. But in this text, we learn that friendship is crucial because it affects our personal faithfulness. If being faithful to God matters to you, you need Christian friends. It's crucial. We'll say it again. If being faithful to God matters to you, and I will assume that the fact that you're here means that it means something to you. If you care about growing spiritually, you need Christian friends. And I hated, but I didn't know how else to put this. This is such a lame way to put this. Corporate success sounds like such a lame thing. All I mean is, as a congregation, if we want to do in 2023 what we want to do, you know what we're going to have to do? Become better friends. If we as a church, so what is this, January 8th? Is this the 8th? January the 8th. We're going to turn around and it's going to be December 31st. Right? Now the young people, the kids are going, it's going to be forever before Christmas comes around again. May never see Christmas again. It's going to be forever. Those of us who are older know that what? This is the 8th of January. It's going to be like we're going to go to bed, get up, and it's going to be December 31st. And we're going to look around, and this church is going to be in some sort of condition. And if it is what we want it to be, guess how it's going to get there? By us having stronger friendships. It's essential. I will say this with no fear of contradiction. The height of your success and our success, the height of our success will be determined by the depth of our friendships. You as a Christian will only go as high as your deepest Christian friendship. And as a congregation, we will only go as high as the deepest of our friendships. That's all. It's all we can do. It's all that's going to happen. It's that important. Friendship is essential for us to do in 2023 what it is that we want to do. Turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 4. This is one of my favorite passages. I know. It really is, though, I promise. Of all my favorite passages, this is probably top five. But I want you to notice something that he says in Ecclesiastes 4. You will figure out very quickly that he's going to use the imagery of farming and working and physical things, but you're going to figure out really quickly that that's not what he's talking about. He He's talking about the impact of friends. In Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. I want to ask you four questions. Number one, do you want to get more work done? I mean spiritually. Do you want to get more work done? Do you want to grow more? Do you want to learn more? Do you want to do more? Do you want to get more done? Then you need a Christian friend. Number two, do you want to get back up? Do you want to get back up? When you fall, do you want to get back up? Now, if you're like me, falling is not an uncommon thing. I fall from time to time, sometimes for no good reason at all. I'm able to pick myself back up. But what he has in mind here is the kind of falling that you do where you're not able to pick yourself back up. One of the most disturbing stories I ever heard. I got a phone call one day, like a lot of you did, that Ray had gone to the hospital. And later on, talking to Ray, found out what had happened. He was working somewhere, I think, on base. His foot was in a hole. He fell over, and his foot didn't come with him. And it snapped right there above his ankle. And he was not able to get up. And if there had been no one around, he would not have been able to get back up. There's falling that you can do where you can just pop back up and go on. You know, the kind where you trip and fall, and your only concern is, did anybody see that? You see people, isn't that what funny how people do that? They trip and fall, and the first thing they do when they get up is what? And then they put on the strut. Right, they strut away. Ask me how I know. But sometimes you fall, you can't get back up. What do you need? It has been almost universal, and I've gone back and forth as to whether or not to say this or not. I'm going to say it. Hopefully you know what I don't mean by this. But without diminishing the power of the word or the power of prayer, without doing that at all, I think I can say that I have never known a Christian who was not down and potentially out for the count spiritually, who has not later said, if it had not been for a person or a congregation, they would not have made it. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever said that? It's, again, I'm not saying that the word and prayer don't bring you back. But I don't think I've ever known a Christian who was knocked out spiritually that did not later say, that person, if it had not been for that person, if that church had not been there for me, if that family had not taken me in. Do you want to get back up? Do you need a friend? Do you want to get warm? Do you want to get warm? What does he say? I love this. If two lie down together, they keep warm. How can one be warm alone? It's hard to get warm. Even under a blanket. Even wearing long handles. Right? Even wearing socks. Hard to get warm by yourself. You can cover up and you can try. But boy, when your feet are cold, if you've got somebody you can put them on, they're going to get warm a lot faster. By the way, if you've got somebody you can put them on, you better be thankful for that, because not everybody lets you put your feet on them. pretty sweet. It's, man, especially when it gets as cold as it can in the winter around here, and you get under the blanket and you shiver and shiver and shiver, but if you got somebody that you can get next to and warm you up, boy, that's a blessing. You need somebody like that. Question number four, do you want to get a win? Right? So, do you want to get work done? Do you want to get back up? Do you want to get warm? Do you want to get a win? If you want to win spiritually, guess what you need? You should know it by now. You need a what? You need a friend. And that's what he's saying in Ecclesiastes. But there's something else. Turn over to Philippians 1. Philippians chapter 1. And we need to understand that if we want to do as a church what we want to do, we need each other. And not simply showing up here at the same time saying howdy as we pass each other and then never seeing or thinking about or connecting with each other between services. Not that. Philippians 1:27. Conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I will hear of you that you are standing firm. Do you want this church to stand firm? Do you want us to believe the truth? Do you want us to teach the truth? Do you want us to live the truth? Do you want us to be a light in this community, sharing the truth? That you are standing firm in one spirit. And Paul, as he is wont to do, not trusting that we will get the point, says, with one mind. Still not sure that we're going to get the point, he says, striving what? Together. For the faith of the gospel. If you want to be what you want to be spiritually, and if you care anything about this church and want it to be what it can be spiritually, what do we need? Deep Christian friendships. Because the height of your success and the height of our success will depend on the depth of our friendships. The facts are this. You're going to be friends with somebody. I know some of us are introverts. Some of us are loners. Some of us can do without people more than some of the rest of us can do without people. I know that. But the fact is, you're going to be friends with somebody. Everybody in this room has friends. You're going to be friends with somebody. You've got friends. This week, you're going to text somebody. You're going to talk to somebody. Visit with somebody, hang out with somebody, do an activity with somebody, email somebody, chat with somebody. All of us are going to do that this week. Here's what we don't always appreciate. Every single text, every single email, every single conversation, every single activity will affect you spiritually. We don't appreciate that, do we? Well, think about that. Every time we pull out our phone or get on the computer or get on the tablet or engage with somebody, we don't think about this is going to have a spiritual outcome. But it is. If you want to be all that you can be spiritually, you need to be intentional about Christian friendships. The basis of a powerful friendship. Did you notice? So back in 1 Samuel chapter 18, did you notice it's kind of weird, because in 1 Samuel 18, it seems like the friendship comes out of nowhere. Have you ever thought about that? You're reading through it, and here's David doing his thing, and then Jonathan comes along and says, I need you in my life, let's be friends. Where did that come from? You know where it came from. You know where it came from. It came from the connection of two events. Jonathan was a man of faith and willing to step out in faith, and so was David. And when Jonathan saw David, he said, that's somebody I need to get close to. That's why. Because Jonathan did it before David did. Jonathan knew what it was to live by faith and fight tough battles. And when he saw David do it, he went, that's who I need in my life. I'm going to make him a friend. That's how it happened. We're connected the same way. Just two things that I want to notice, and we'll talk some practical things and be done. They had a common tie. David and Jonathan had a common tie. They believed in God. They trusted in God. They were willing to do hard things for God. They had a common tie. Just like you have with the people in this room. They had a common tie. Belief in God, trust in God, faith in God, living for God, acting for God in faith. You have it. The people in this room have it. We have a common tie, but there's more. There's also, Jonathan realizes, when it comes to David, an uncommon level of trust. David and Jonathan did something similar, but not identical. When Jonathan went, did he go alone? No, he had backup. When David went, what did he have? A sling and 5 stones. When Jonathan went, he said, you know, God might make this work out. Did you notice that? Perhaps God. When David went, he said what? Before this is over, I'm going to cut off your head. And that's all there is to it. When the Israelite soldiers were shaking and crying and whining in their tents, watching David go to fight Goliath, who was one of those soldiers shaking in his tent? Jonathan. We know that Jonathan was there because he walks right up when David's talking to Saul. Jonathan, when Goliath walked out and said, I dare somebody to come fight me, and all the Israelite soldiers were shaking in their tent, Jonathan was right there with them. So Jonathan recognized in David something special. And he said, that man has something of faith that I need. I'm going to be his friend. I'm going to bring him into my life. So not only are we looking for Christian friends that we have something in common with, we're looking for Christian friends who will level us up, who will help us go farther. This is what we're looking for. We already have the common tie. What Christian do you know who has something you don't have? And how are you going to bring it into your life? Well, how do we do that? We're awfully busy. And if there's one thing that I can't stand for preachers to do, it's to stand up in the pulpit and hammer everybody about doing more, 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 more. Because none of us feel like we can do anymore. It just drives me crazy. When a preacher stands up and acts like that everybody else has his schedule. Everybody else has his day. Where he's very flexible and has very few set appointments and can work around a lot of things. And sometimes as preachers we stand up and act like everybody else the same way. I know that you're busy. And I know that the last thing that you want is for somebody to stand up here and say, now let me give you a list of 7 things to add to your schedule. But if you don't mind, I want to give you 7 things. To add to your schedule. But, I can promise you, this is super easy. This is 7 of the easiest things you'll ever do. I promise you that. I promise, no matter who you are, you can do these things. Number one, make a list. Make a list of all the Christians that you want to be closer to because you have a common tie and they have something you don't have. Make a list. We're talking about being intentional. We're talking about making a plan. Right? Don't just go home today and go, yeah, that'd be great. I hope that works out. Horrible. Make a list. Number 2, make the approach. Walk up to or call Or if you want low pressure, right? How do we do that these days? We text. That's right. We text. We give people an out. We'll put people on the spot. Make the approach in some way and say, listen, I think that you've got something spiritually that I really need. You've got a component or a level that I want to get to. Would you mind helping me get there? Who's going to say no to that? Who's going to say no to that? At the very least, you know, you made them feel special and feel like they're, you know, doing something right. Yeah, of course. Number three, set up a weekly thread, email, text, or direct message. Email, text, or direct message. Obviously, same gender, very much what we, you know, need to do there, not different genders. That can lead to difficulty. So you're a man, another man, a woman, another woman. But set up a weekly thread. Text, email, or message. And just connect through that thread at least once a week. That's it. I mean, it's not it. That's it for that. Number four. Why not, when you've got some sort of Christian activity to do, why not do it together? If you're going to go see somebody, or if you're going to come to the building and do some work, or if you're going to do something that's Christian service, why not do it together? You need to be doing it. They need to be doing it. Do it together. It's just not adding anything. Number whatever that is, five. During the week, share items of interest, right? If you have a text thread, you run across an article that makes you think of them, send it along. You run across a post that's relevant, just share it. How easy is it to share stuff? Simple. Number six, I think. Actually have human contact once a month. Real human contact once a month, even if it's just on the phone. Even if it's just on the phone. And then finally, be sure that you go out of your way to connect at church. You're going to be in church. They're going to be in church. Take that time to connect face to face and spend a minute together. I'm telling you, anybody can do that. Anybody can do what I've just described. Anybody, literally. So, this is how we deepen our friendships together. Most of you are going to have to be intentional about it. Some of you aren't. Some of you, for one reason or another, the elders, they just, because of their job, they get together, meet, talk regularly. They don't have to go out of their way to do this kind of thing. But most of us will. Next week, Lord willing, we're going to look at a couple of more things with David and Jonathan. Jonathan does something pretty remarkable in regards to David, a couple of things that we'll notice, Lord willing, next week, next Sunday morning. But again, we really need to get this. Because friendship is one of those words that doesn't sound all that crucial. But if you want to be personally excellent, and if you want the church to be what it can be, our friendships are absolutely essential. The height of your success will be determined by the depth of your friendships, and so will ours. Will you do what we've talked about this morning? Reach out, make contact, and begin to deepen your Christian friendships. If you care about your spiritual growth, you will. And if you care about the health and activity of this congregation, you will. That's what it's going to take. I was struck, and I have been before, we were singing this. You can take out your songbook and we'll sing the song of invitation in just a minute. But I was struck, as I often am, by a line in the song we were singing, "Make Me a Servant." Make me a servant. Make me like you. Make me a servant. And that next line, I always wonder if we really mean it. I wonder if I mean it. So let me say that. I start here. Let me just say that. I start here because that line scares me to death. There aren't many lines in hymns that scare me other than Farther Along. There aren't many lines in hymns that scare me to death like this one. I'm almost scared to sing it. I'll be honest with you. I'm almost scared to sing it and mean it. You know what it says? Make me a servant. Do what you must do. That scares me to death. Because what are you saying to God? Whatever it takes. Well, look, he's got a lot of tools in that bag. A lot of things that he can do. A lot of ways that he can form us and make us what he wants us to be. That's a big invitation to throw it open to God and give him a blank check and say, whatever you want to do. This is one of the things that God does. He puts Christians in our lives and then asks us to pursue with intention those relationships. It's that important. Maybe you're not a Christian and everything that we've been talking about has kind of got some distance for you because you're not a Christian. Well, we'd love to talk to you about, we'd love to meet you where you are. You think, why would I want to be? Well, let's talk about it. Why do I need to be? We'll study about it. I've got some obstacles or some hang-ups or some challenges, and I think I might like to be a Christian, but you don't know what I'm carrying around. Well, let's talk about it. We can talk about that. But if you're ready to become a Christian, we're ready to help you do that. Water's ready, garments ready. You didn't have to bring anything with you. Everything's here. Or if you want to study, we'll study. If you are a Christian, what we want more than anything is to be a friend to you. Be a friend to you. Not church members with you. Not fellow members of an organization, club. We want to be a friend to you. With all, everything that means. Brother Tom and I were talking this morning after class and before church. He said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I just want you to know right now, you stand up there in Bible class and say something wrong, I'm going to stand up back here and say, brother, you're wrong about that. I love you, but you're wrong. I said, okay. But I want you to know, if you do that, I'm going to thank you for it. And I'm going to count you as a friend, because that's what friends do. All right, we want to be a friend to you. That's what friends do. We want to be there for you and help you and get you where you need to be. I can say without any fear of contradiction, well, you can contradict it, but you'll be wrong. You can't get there without the church. You can't. You can't get there. Without the church. The Bible's clear about that. You can't get there without the church. And I don't just mean going to church. I mean being a real part of the church. Anyway, I'll stop rambling. I'll give you time to think. We're going to sing the invitation song while we're doing that. If you decide that there's something that you need to do that we can help with, we want to help you with it. We'd love to talk to you privately after church, or you can come forward, take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.